Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Yes, and we have Mr. David Slack on the line. Morning, David. Are you there?
Morena, Tima.
Great.
Good morning,
David. Good morning.
Billy, how are you?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm looking at civil war in America. I'm looking at a drop-dead useless government here. I'm looking outside and it's raining. Couldn't be better.
Couldn't be better. Hey, well, that's fantastic to hear. You've sent us through a little blurb about how we've got 300 environmental lawyers trying to sue the New Zealand government over its dangerously inadequate emissions reduction plan. Is this legit? Is this legitimately happening?
Yeah, it is. For all the details, go to The Guardian and see the great story that Eva Corlett has written about it. But essentially, you've got two large climate action groups that represent all of these lawyers, and they are taking the government to judicial review as the particular legal process that's going on here. But right. Essentially, what they're saying is the government has been absolutely useless about the climate crisis, that it has systematically dismantled effective climate policies and gone on making cooing noises to its vested interests while it bends all the way backwards to accommodate them. But what it really means is what modest progress we had been making under previous governments is now being wholesale ripped apart. And for right. this, I wrote about this yesterday on my Substack, and I drew people's attention to the very solid accounting that has been done about this by Russell Norman. He's brought receipts. on the Greenpeace page, he's written a chronology of week by week
right.
what the Luxon government has done, and it really is quite a charge sheet. And I thought I might just give you a few examples of it. For example, a $200 million taxpayer subsidy for oil and gas exploration, which is surprising in its own terms because this is a government that says it doesn't believe in subsidies, but
yep.
still they're using taxpayer money to help oil companies find more fossil fuels.
Oh.
But the point here is fossil fuels are not what we're wanting to be doing here. The point here is that the sooner we can get to renewable energy and sustainable energy, the better off we all are. And look, there is an argument that can be made that there's a transition process involved here, and we do need some gas to get us there. But you don't need to be going to this extent to make it happen. And moreover, what you're doing by putting the money up for this rather than, I don't know, e-bikes for people or solar panels on roofs, $200 million.
More windmills.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah.
Okay, that's one of about 100. He's
100?
Wow. Example. I haven't counted it precisely, but certainly many dozens. Number two, I've made a top 10, actually. We're
okay.
now at number two. Fossil fuel lobbyist now runs Energy Efficiency Authority. They appointed John Carnegie, who actively opposed grants to reduce fossil fuel use, to run the EECA. This is an agency that Jeanette Fitzsimons created specifically to cut fossil fuel consumptions. This
right.
is like putting a tobacco executive in charge of anti-smoking campaigns.
Ah, it's not like we haven't done that before.
Yeah, if we look across to Casey Costello, we see that this is also going on, but I digress. Number three, zero bids at carbon auctions, which is the carbon market has completely collapsed under this government. You've had multiple auctions with zero bids. They have destroyed any price signal by flooding the market with free credits to polluters, while they go on claiming that they support market-based solutions. This is, if you had a market with real teeth, and if you had a carbon tax that really makes people realise, we need to be changing what we're doing here, we need to be looking at sustainable options, renewable options, net zero options, you'll hear this a lot from businesses here. They have the will, to a reasonable degree, to do what's necessary, but they're also not inclined to do it until they really have to, because as ever. You know, there's always money for something else. There's always the pressure to keep the profits up and deliver the money for the boss, for the shareholders. And so things keep getting kicked down the road. And the larger point about all of this is that we've both got carrot and stick here. The stick is, if we don't do big action, if we don't achieve big action, we have a terrible crisis coming. Mm-hmm. The flip of it is that there are so many opportunities for us in particular, the Aotearoa, as an economy, if we embrace green energy and an abundance of green energy, because potentially that means that you could have a lot more businesses coming here from elsewhere in the world and taking advantage of our abundant energy, which we could create by, for instance, making the most of offshore wind. They call us the Saudi Arabia of the world's winds.
That's true.
And you only need to step outside any old day of the week to test the truth.
100%.
Yeah.
Is the right bloc sort of, they just don't want to have anything to do with green energy and things like that? Why is it their imperative to not go that way?
And to some extent, you get the feeling that, the simple answer is selfishness. It doesn't suit me. Mm. I'm making money this way. I don't want to have to change. And so then they will look around for excuses like, oh, technology's going to save us. Oh, we're not that big. It doesn't make a difference. Mm. So I'll answer the rest of the question in a moment, but I'll just digress for a moment. In World War II, we didn't make that much of a difference, but it didn't stop us sending off a vast proportion of our young people to fight in that war.
That's
because
true.
It mattered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. So if the question is, you know, we're not that big, does it help? Well, it helped then and it can help now because it matters that everybody does it. But anyway, yeah. That was my digression. You were asking about the right block. There's also the I don't know, there's a sort of bloody mindedness to it as well. Mm. I like my Ford Ranger. I like my life the way it is. Don't you people tell me how to change my life? I'm not interested. So there's that as well. Yeah, there's sort of culture war dimension to it.
Right.
But I think for the largest part, what we've got is a failure of imagination. They can't imagine that. Well, they and maybe unease. You know, some people don't like the idea of changing to something new and something better or something different. But then finally you do, and then suddenly everybody says, oh, yeah, this is a good idea. But like, you know, at the time of the Springbok tour, you had half the country saying essentially thought we should leave South Africa to its own business. Today, you'll hardly find a person in New Zealand who says it was a good idea to have apartheid in South Africa.
History shows.
Sometimes you have to wait for people to get it, for the penny to drop and for them to get a clue.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, with the climate crisis, we don't really have that luxury of waiting for them. We've got to move. But to repeat my earlier point, you know, there's a huge payoff if we do. Potentially, if we change the way we all move about, so there are many more of us in buses and on feet and on foot and on e-bikes, it's a nicer surrounding. If we reduce our carbon footprint, if we transform the way the world gets its energy, we have a happier future and a security that comes with it. But the flip side of that, it's, you know, the more that the temperature heats, the more you have wild weather, the more you have famine, the more you have dislocated people in their millions. And, you know, if you think immigration arguments are a problem now, you wait till you've got millions and millions of people on the move, which there will be as the equator gets hotter and hotter and people have to move out of that belt.
Well,
so, you know, carrot and stick.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I've been thinking about this whole kind of issue. It's like, it's internationally embarrassing for us to not take action. This affects
absolutely
the whole planet, not just us. Without
youths.
Texter just texted in and was like, you know, BFM has a ute. And that, yeah, fair enough.
Let's get an electric car ASAP.
We need an electric. You're right, Texter. We do have a ute. We're part of the problem.
I saw my first electric ute this week. The BYD.
Oh, the BYD. Yeah. They exist.
That's so.
Look, the name's baked in. BYD.
Oh,
need one.
Time for a trade-in.
Marketing proposition.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you
David,
so much
for your
David.
Time.
Pleasure both of you. Nice to chat.
Sweet, Kit. Talk to you next time.
Dave, bye-bye.
Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.